All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated.
Good morning. Our first case is 10-636, State of Ohio, XRL Akron Peyton Varnish versus Giuseppe Galati and Industrial Commission of Ohio. For the appellants, I believe Ms. Porter is going first.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, this is not a continuing jurisdiction case. This is not a voluntary abandonment case. If it please the court, I will focus 6 minutes on the continuing jurisdiction case. My co-counsel, Mr. Fulton, will focus on voluntary abandonment for 6 minutes, and we will reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is not a case of continuing jurisdiction because no previous order of the Industrial Commission was modified to create the order that is at issue here. Rather, November 2007 order denied Mr. Galati TT for a limited time between April 24th and November 4th, 2007. The order at issue here is for a totally separate time period of TT and based on an additional condition to his claim, which means that that continuing jurisdiction was simply not necessary to support this particular order.
Counsel, could you describe a little bit the nature of this second injury and how it was tied into the first injury?
Yeah, the injury itself, or the first allowed condition, was a back sprain, a lumbar sprain. The second condition was one that that the doctors recognized sometime later that it was an aggravation of a pre-existing condition of some of his lumbar vertebrae. The later condition being recognized later, Mr. Galati came back later and asked for a second period of TT.
Is the argument that both conditions were created at the same time, but one of them did not manifest itself until a later time?
Yeah, there's a little bit of confusion in the factual record there, but yes, essentially that's correct. He sprained his back. He went through rehab and so on, came back to a light-duty job, but his back pain continued to get worse. And then he went back for more testing, and the doctors recognized that the original injury and, you know, subsequent work had aggravated a pre-existing condition in his back. But, yes, both of the conditions date back to the original injury when he sprained his back.
Thank you.
The July 2008 order, which is the order at issue here, allowed TT for a totally separate period from November 5th, 2007 forward. It did not disturb the original order that had actually denied TT because Mr. Galati had refused a light-duty job. In addition, it was also based on the commission's recognition that the restrictions for the additional condition were greater than the restrictions for his original condition, and therefore the light-duty job he had been offered and refused originally may not have been sufficient, or his rejection of that light-duty job may not have or did not preclude this second period of TT.
So when he was given the light-duty assignment and he walked away or terminated that assignment, that's not an issue before us at the moment.
I don't know. I would say that it's not an issue because the commission found that his restrictions were greater for the second condition. And so that the fact that they accommodated.
And the second condition manifested from which period of employment? During that light duty or a prior period?
Well, I think medically the doctors would probably say it had started to manifest, but it was not recognized until that first period of TT that was denied was over. It was diagnosed after the first period of TT and after that period of TT had been rejected.
What was the basis that then the commission reassumed jurisdiction?
The basis is 412356, which allows for multiple periods of TT. If you look at the case State X Rel Bing, which is cited in the briefs, footnote one explains Bing itself was talked about continuing jurisdiction, but it was talking about a case in which the injury had occurred in the 70s. It also discussed in footnote one the amendments to the law in 1987, I believe, that changed 412356 to recognize multiple periods of TT, and so that therefore the commission no longer has to go through the full rigmarole of continuing jurisdiction. They can simply rely on 56.
Did I understand you said this was an aggravation of a pre-existing condition?
Correct.
Or is this a new condition?
It's a newly recognized condition. It's a newly recognized or newly diagnosed condition, but it was an aggravation of a pre-existing condition that the aggravation was caused by the injury, the sprain. But it didn't manifest itself,
so
or at least it was not diagnosed.
This claim relates to the original injury.
I'm sorry?
This claim, the second claim, relates to the original injury.
Correct. Correct. It's the doctors believe that the original injury caused the aggravation that is causing these new symptoms.
But since your client declined the job that everyone, I believe, agrees was suitable, he walked away from that job, and there was a year period before this aggravation. And has he had any intervening employment since then? And
not that
not,
I know.
How should we treat that claim for TC?
Well, first of all, not my client. I represent the Industrial Commission. It's my understanding from the record, and perhaps Mr. Fulton can be more detailed than I, but it's my understanding that he was given a light-duty job, which he worked for a while and then rejected, and went very quickly thereafter to the doctor and got this second.
It wasn't a year time period?
It might have been a year by the time that it went through all the mechanisms at the Bureau and in which the second condition was allowed.
So if we accept your position, what's the rule of law that we would be writing then, that injured workers can decline light-duty and then have an aggravation a year later that allows them to go back for benefits from the same employer?
Yes, and I believe that's not anything new. If you look at Ellis Super Value, that is not a new proposition of law. That is a well-established. I noticed that my time is up, and I'll let Mr. Fulton.
Your Honors, may it please the Court. I'm Ross Fulton here on behalf of Giuseppe Galata. Your Honors, we're here to ask simply that this Court follow its proud tradition and defer to the General Assembly's workers' compensation statutory scheme. This great tradition is the touchstone of our argument here. In other words, this Court should simply apply 4123.56A as written. This statutory provision does preclude someone from getting temporary total disability when they refuse a light-duty job. But it does not contain an additional requirement that that person go back to work before they're eligible for a subsequent period of temporary total disability. And this Court in Bang has recognized that claimants are eligible for different periods of temporary total disability in their lifetimes just for the simple reality that people get hurt at multiple points in time. To put such an additional requirement that someone should go back to work before being eligible for temporary total again would be a policy choice, and such a policy choice should be left for the General Assembly. By being strict constructionists here, it's clear Mr. Galata was eligible for a subsequent period of temporary total benefits. Just a quick background note, because I think the facts here will be helpful. Mr. Galata has multiple conditions that are allowed in this claim right now, as is common with a workers' compensation injury. His claim was originally allowed for a lumbar sprain strain, as Ms. Porter pointed out. As just a matter of course, oftentimes a workers' compensation claimant will have an additional allowance, or an original allowance, I should say, and then go back and be allowed for subsequent additional conditions on top of that. While Mr. Galata's claim was allowed just for a sprained strain, we all agree that he left his light-duty job offer, and While we'll admit that Mr. Gullotta did not handle this situation well by leaving, he left because he believed that he had these additional conditions that had not yet been allowed that precluded him from performing his light-duty job.
So the light-duty job was aggravating his pre-existing injury?
No. The pre-existing injury was aggravated at the same point in time that his lumbar sprain strain happened. However, Mr. Gullotta believed he had this additional condition the entire time, so he did not believe he could perform that light-duty job.
Well, was the light-duty job, what was his current state of health, his back injury, did that preclude him from doing light-duty work?
Mr. Gullotta believed so, and the commission and his doctor subsequently affirmed that, yes, it did prevent him from doing that light-duty job. And it was the basis of his physician's report saying that the commission allowed the claim for the additional condition of substantial aggravation of pre-existing hypertrophy at the L4, L5 facet
joints. So he didn't have an obligation to go to the bring to light the fact that he has a condition, and even though the light-duty job was described and he took it, it's not working out because he's still incapable of doing this. And as an alternative, he just quit without allowing for a modification of the light-duty.
We agree that Mr. Gullotta, at that period in time, the commission was correct in terminating his TT benefits, and that's just laid out in the statute. 56A says if you refuse a light-duty job, that at that time the commission finds you're capable of doing, you're precluded from light-duty benefits.
Right, and wouldn't the better course have been to go back and say, yes, I know that you gave me these restrictions, and my employer is trying to accommodate with this light-duty job, but even this light duty, the duties of the light duty job, I cannot perform. So let's give the employer an opportunity to modify?
We agree that that would have probably been the better course of action at the time. However, just on the facts of this case, what did happen was when his claim was allowed, there was not a modification of the job, and in fact, his physician found that with these additional conditions, he was incapable of performing the original job that was offered. There was no subsequent.
Was he incapable of performing any type of work, sedentary or any kind of work?
He, at that point in time, his...
After the second condition?
Correct, yes. He was found that he was required temporary total disability because he obviously could not go back to his former position of employment. That was all agreed upon. Mm-hmm. His physician found that this light-duty job that had been offered, he could no longer perform. So, well, as
but,
a result...
But the question was, could he perform any kind of work?
Well, that was not an issue, Your Honor, at that time, because for temporary total disability, and this again gets back to the just following the statute, all that's required is that a claimant not be able to perform his former position of employment, have not reached maximum medical improvement, and, as I said, not refuse a suitable light-duty job. But it has to be found that that job is suitable for his conditions.
Well, the employer here had no opportunity to offer him a different type of light-duty job, correct?
There was...
Because he'd left the employment. How does the employer offer him a revised, modified light-duty job if he voluntarily quit his employment?
Well, I think we should be careful in the terms we use.
Well, that was a bad choice of terms.
Sure.
Voluntarily left his employment, I guess.
And I think that we need to be careful here in using the words quit versus refusal. The statute clearly lays out that regardless of why, if you refuse a light-duty job and it's a suitable one, then you're not eligible for temporary total. But the employer had the opportunity, after this claim was allowed for the additional conditions, to offer another job to him.
Did your client apply for reemployment?
I think that I honestly don't know the direct answer to that question, but I think that there was, at that time, because this case was pending, there still could have been an offer. And I believe the issue here, again, is that there's nothing in the statute that says that he has to reapply for work or has to reenter the workforce after refusing a light-duty job offer. The courts, as this court has repeatedly observed, it's the General Assembly's role to craft workers' compensation policy for when a claimant is eligible for temporary total benefits or not. And, for example, the General Assembly has said when you refuse a light-duty job offer, you're not eligible for temporary total benefits. But it does, it says nothing in that statute about having to reenter the workforce to be eligible for a subsequent period of temporary total disability.
Mr. Fulton, though, when you talk about the suitability of the light-duty job, isn't it the employee's responsibility to have medical evidence to show that, indeed, this is not a suitable job for the condition? I mean, here we don't have a we have the physician later on saying, well, this is what I think, but we don't have the physician saying this job can't be done, and then your client leaving the position.
Well, and as I said, Your Honor, we all, I think, agree that Mr. Gulati did not handle the situation at the time well, but it was found by the physician that he could not perform this duty, and the administrative code says that a suitable light-duty job offer to be suitable must take all the allowed conditions into account, and here the light-duty job offer only took the lumbar sprain strain into account, not the additional allowed condition.
So if we accept your position, how long does the employer's liability extend? How long could your client come back to him with continued aggravation over the course of time?
Well, I think, again, we need to, the continued aggravation, we need to realize that aggravation was out of a specific workplace injury, the same one that caused a lumbar sprain strain.
From a job that he voluntarily left?
No, it was not from the job he voluntarily left. He was injured at his original position. Everyone here agrees that his former position, he could not perform it anymore.
So he was assigned light duty.
Correct.
And he left. So how long, under your scenario, would the employer's liability extend if we accept your proposition of law?
The employer's liability would extend just as long as the workers' compensation statutory scheme lays out, where in this case he had an additional condition allowed, and the commission will then determine whether he's entitled to temporary
with no
total.
Requirement that he seek other employment.
The statute, Your Honor, does not have such a requirement in it, and this court has repeatedly observed that it's the General Assembly's duty to make such policies, and they have done so repeatedly, and not this court. I see I'm running over my time, so I'll save time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mr. Willinger.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court. My name is Rick Williger. I do have the honor of representing Akron Paint and Varnish this morning. And I did want to respond, if I could, before I go into what I prepared with a couple of notes, having heard the other side talking. There's a couple of points, I think, that are just a little bit more in dispute than you would hear. The staff hearing officer, as we know, there's more than one staff hearing officer decision. There was the first decision denying temporary total compensation because the injured worker had refused a light-duty job. Then there's another staff hearing officer decision, which is really forms a basis for this litigation, which is granting temporary total compensation despite the fact that there was a finding that he had refused a light-duty job under 4123.56A. What the staff hearing officer did not say, the staff hearing officer in the second order did not say that she was granting temporary total compensation based on increased restrictions. What she did say was that she was granting temporary total compensation based on a newly allowed condition, and that was it. And I think that's an important distinction. I think you'll agree that that's an important distinction because there are no additional light-duty restrictions that were placed as a result of the newly allowed condition. As a matter of fact, going into the record, you'll also see a letter from his physician, which is dated June 4th, 2008. It's part of the record, where this physician who wrote the letter that formed the basis for the additional allowance actually said, I do not believe Dr. Snowman's report is accurate. He's assuming since the condition is now allowed that I somehow believe Mr. Gulati was temporarily totally disability due to the new allowed condition. That's not the case. He says, it's my opinion, has been my opinion since the time of treatment of Mr. Gulati of 9/11/7 that he was temporary total disability. I think what he's saying there is that just as they said that all conditions sprang from the same event, that he had the same restrictions from the same event. His restrictions didn't change. The newly allowed condition was simply a recognition that there was another condition that was allowed as a result of the injury, but the condition didn't change, but the restrictions didn't change. And I think that's an important distinction because...
So you're saying that there's no evidence that he got worse
over a period of time.
Correct.
And additional restrictions were put in. It just, they discovered another cause for the problems he was having, gave another allowance. Conditions remained the same, and since he had refused the employment for those conditions, that controls now.
That's exactly what I'm saying. That's correct. I think there's another point that needs to be cleared up, and that is, why did he quit? Why did he leave? Why did he walk out of a job that he could do? And part of it is, again, this is in the record, it's in the stipulations. There's a letter from a doctor, I think it's Ray Manzarek. It's on page 7, Exhibit C. It's, the doctor is M-A-Z-A-N-E-C. And what he's talking about here is that he was complaining of increased pain, but he also felt as though he was being humiliated. So the reason that he walked out of this job, I would submit to you, had little to do with his physical capabilities or lack thereof, but more to do with the job that he wanted to do and didn't want to do. There's also a letter that's in the record from Mike Summers, who's vice president, where he discusses the light-duty job offer that was made to Mr. Galata. And all of this stuff is uncontroverted and formed the basis for the first SHO decision denying temporary total compensation for his refusal of light-duty work.
Counsel, what we're hearing here is a lot of it is very fact-specific, and ordinarily we wouldn't get into an oral argument just for that. We're getting the sense, certainly your client thinks you're dealing with a lingering claimant who really doesn't want to work, and that might even be true. But the state's here because they're concerned that the holding of the Court of Appeals could jeopardize people who are not malingering. And the way the Court of Appeals opinion is written could be problematic for claimants about which you don't have the same kinds of factual pattern underlying the claim that you have here. Can you articulate a way through this that has us, you want us to decide in favor of your client, a way for us to do that that does not cause the problems that the state is concerned about for other legitimately injured people for which there is not such a factual dispute as to whether or not this claimant is worthy?
I think that the specific intent of the injured worker, I agree with you, should be taken out of the equation. I think what we have to look at is, as we often do, the objective activities of people involved in.
Well, they're arguing if we just read the statute, the Court of Appeals was wrong.
Well, obviously, I disagree. I think the Court of Appeals was right. I think under 4123.56A, somebody who refuses an offer of light duty that they can do within their physical restrictions has essentially made their own bed. Whether they did it with good intent or bad intent, I really don't think really makes a difference. The fact is they've left a job that they can do, and they're asking to be compensated an entitlement for something that, had they not walked away from something they could do, they'd still be earning money. Temporary total compensation really wouldn't even be an issue at that point because they'd already be working.
But perhaps they can't do the light duty. Then will you?
There's no evidence in this case that says he can. And that's I guess, what I was trying to say, that all the evidence says he could do the work that he walked away from.
Mr. Willinger, if there was a doctor's order or a doctor's letter or some evidence, some medical evidence that stated this individual cannot do the light duty work, we'd be in a different situation, correct?
Depending on when that letter was written, yes.
I mean, if it's before the individual actually leaves the job, the light duty job.
I submit to you that had that occurred, the very first staff hearing officer order that found that he left a light-duty job that he could do would never have existed. And you're probably right. At that point, he would have been temporarily and totally disabled. Prior to this time that he was on light duty, he was actually getting a form of temporary total compensation. He was actually off work for a couple months the employer had elected to pay what's called salary continuation, which is a replacement for temporary total compensation. He came back to the light duty job and didn't like it. Well, my interpretation, wasn't happy there for whatever reason, decided to leave. And had we had that letter that you're discussing right now, you're probably right, we probably wouldn't be here.
So let me ask it, if I could ask it a different way, is it necessary that there be medical evidence before we find someone is not able to do a light duty job in this particular situation?
I would even expand that and to say in most situations, absent medical evidence, you're not going to get a finding of temporary total disability.
But the statute itself doesn't have that condition spelled out in it, correct?
Well, the statute itself, I think, says that somebody is entitled to temporary total compensation if they can't return to their former position of employment. What we're here under is 4123.56A that says, okay, you can't go back to your old job, but if there's anything you can do, then you're going to do it. And if you leave something you can do, then we're not going to pay you temporary total. I think it assumes that you have some sort of medical evidence that shows that you can't do the job in the first place.
Thank you.
So maybe the solution to the question Justice Pfeiffer raised is that if we decide that there is no, in looking at the evidence, there is no further restrictions, and he walked away from a job he could do, to prevent any future legitimately injured parties, it would have to have evidence that there were further restrictions to prohibit them from going back to a same light duty job.
I agree, pardon me, I agree with that, but I'm not, the wild hair in this particular case is that he walked away from a job he could do. And I don't think I'm saying anything that's not accurate there. The question that comes up is the question that Ms. Porter first raised, which is, are we here on a matter of continuing jurisdiction? The problem here in this particular case, and workers' comp cases I find to be horrendously fact-specific. I just don't know any other way around it, and this case also. But one of the things that we have is we have a staff hearing officer order that found specific facts, and the specific facts that were found are that this person walked away from a job that he could do for no medical reason.
What was the job he was doing before he was injured?
Before he was injured, he was in shipping and receiving.
Doing what?
Can't specifically answer that. I don't know.
Was he keeping books, or was he running a tow motor, or was he lifting containers?
I do know that he was doing something that was of a physical nature because that's how he injured himself.
Right. And what was the light duty work to which he was assigned?
He was assigned, actually, that's in this letter that Mr. Summers wrote that's dated April 17, 2007. It was, and it actually goes through the job description, says that you can do it in whatever order you want, but here's something you can do, and it involved labeling empty pails, which are 3 pounds each, using an automatic labeler, running a tenant sweeper in shipping, which was a sit-down job, similar to a fork truck, labeling small packaging items, 4-ounce cans, quarts, and dot markers. That all means something to these people. It doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but it means something to them, and it's a specific job that he could do within his physical restrictions.
And comparable compensation or substantially less compensation?
Compensation was not at issue.
All right.
And as a matter of fact, one of the other things that Mr. Summers mentioned in this letter, and again was undisputed, and I'll get back to my point in 1 second, is that if he didn't like that particular job, he wanted to go back in shipping and receiving, and again, that's in this letter, and that wasn't able to be done because of his physical restrictions. He wanted to do something else, and what was offered was, fine, give us an idea about what you want to do, or maybe we'll send you out for functional capacity evaluation. All of that's in this letter. And instead of saying, okay, some of that sounds reasonable, he simply said no and he left. And again, I think if we didn't have those particular findings of fact, and getting back to my original point, because it feeds into the continuing jurisdiction that was originally brought up here, those facts were found by the first staff hearing officer that he walked away from a job under these circumstances. Unless you have continuing jurisdiction and opening up that prior order that was not contested, you have findings of fact that are going to be binding on the future fact finder. Now, unless you've got some sort of additional medical evidence that says, okay, now we have a situation where because of the additional condition, he can't do X, Y, and Z, and we've looked at this job that was offered, and yes, we agree he can't do it. Absent something like that, he simply remains ineligible for temporary total compensation.
Well, counsel, how is this, if it is at all, setting up, if we affirm, how is this setting up a trap for legitimately injured and assigned employees in the future, which I think is the concern, that if this might be a precedent that in some way is going to alter an employee's relationship to the system based on this? When you say this is extremely fact-specific, and I think it is, in knowing the case here, how can this be stretched and applied to other areas to their detriment?
If I understand your question, it's how can we make sure that, people who don't do this sort of thing get compensated as they should, which is an interest that we all share. And I think in this case, I think the answer to this case really gives the answer, and I think it was pointed out before. Had he come forward with medical evidence that said, I couldn't do this, you know, Mr. Fulton concedes that his client didn't handle this in the best way, and I think that's why we're here. But had he come forward with medical evidence from his doctor or gone to his doctor and the doctor wrote a letter that said, I've examined what you're asking him to do, he can't do this with the allowed conditions or with his symptoms, we wouldn't be here. I think people who have legitimate injuries, and I'm not doubting his injury is legitimate, it's a recognized claim, but people who have problems doing X, Y, or Z, we've always had to rely on their physicians to say they can't do X, Y, and Z. This case is really no different.
Is it the timing of the presentation of the medical evidence? Because here it sure appears that afterwards we have a doctor saying he can't do X, Y, Z, correct?
Actually, no, I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. I don't see any medical that says that. I see some medical that says he has another condition, but I also see his doctor saying he's had the same problems since the word go. There's something called a Medco 14, which in workers' comp world is a form that the doctor fills out that says here's the restrictions this person has. There was no Medco 14 that was filed after that point, on or after that point. There was no other medical evidence that was filed on or after that point that says he now has more further restrictions because of this other condition. Had that been the case, we might not be here.
Counsel, I have a follow-up. The claimant's counsel wasn't able to answer the question for sure, but did the claimant here ever reapply for employment employer?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fulton, you've used up all of your time. You may have 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honors. And I go back to the old saying, don't let bad facts make bad law. Granted, we have a claimant here who did not handle the situation well, but the 10th District's creating a bold new standard that a claimant has to reenter the workforce without any statutory support for that standard.
Do you have any proof of medical evidence that he had further restrictions after the second condition?
Yes, Your Honor. On page 11 of the supplement, Dr. Unger says he has an additional condition and he cannot perform any modified light-duty work.
So he cannot do anything at all anymore? Is that what he's saying?
That was Dr. Unger's opinion, and that was accepted by the commission, and the commission's factual findings are entitled to deference by this court on mandamus review.
So you have a factual dispute with what the attorney for Akron says?
Correct. Yes, we do.
So we'd have to look at those facts, and if we disagree with that language or we find that language is not sufficient, then we're back to square one, aren't we?
We are, Your Honor. However, again, we should be this is not a de novo review here. We're here on abuse of discretion standards. So if there's any doubt, the deference should go to the commission's determination. And that applies both here, and it applies to the 10th District, again, not following the statutory scheme, but, again, creating their own standard. But
Dr. Unger's statement that you just referred to is after the April 16th, 2007 unilateral resignation, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor, and I think that that is just simply, there's a temporal difficulty, as we all know, with getting into physicians. Mr. Galata left the job because he believed he had these additional conditions, and that's when Dr. Unger reviewed him. He agreed. The commission agreed, and the commission's determination is entitled to deference. We should be deferring to the commission as well as the statutory scheme and not, again, actively creating new standards as the 10th District did here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.